the side.
Still hit the front of the projector with the
okay remote. And I understand it would help if I do this, and Mackenzie, you're going to have an awful hard time seeing with me right over here.
That's okay.
So I'm going to suggest that you find another spot.
I'll move down a bit.
Well, good evening, and thanks for being here tonight, and thanks for the invitation to come and speak to you and to share with you some of what God has been doing through the mission of the Church of the Nazarene in places that are pretty amazing. I have served, as Pastor said, for a period of time on the faculty of the Southeast Asian Nazarene Bible College. I stutter over that because they've recently changed their name, and they're now Chapman International College, moving toward becoming a four-year liberal arts school just like NNU is over there in Nampa. But I've served there as a professor of practical theology and dean of academics, and it's been quite an adventure to be there. Most recently, I have been... Now, John, you told me...
It's the page up button.
Yeah, I'm pushing that. That one.
Let's try the other one. Or maybe it doesn't like where you're standing. There we go.
What did you push? Oh, you pushed that one.
Yeah. So I think we're good.
All right. I'm thoroughly confused. So what's the story on Southeast Asia? I see some of you many of you that, like myself, lived through our images of the past of Vietnam. We remember the destruction of the war. We remember all of the horror that took place during that time. We remember the final takeover and the surrender that was so heartbreaking for so many. We remember the pictures of people climbing up on top of the rooftop. I've been there, I've seen this building, it's quite a hike to get up there, and the helicopters landing up on top. It's a haunting nightmare for many as we think about all the difficult things that took place over there. And I think the young man has it right when he wrote on his helmet that war is hell. But today, Ho Chi Minh City is a remarkable place, totally transformed. It's nothing like it was. Fabulous new airport. It accommodates millions of passengers every single year. It's a city that is absolutely stunning by day, and at the same time, it is awesome by night. It's a place where you just find all kinds of fabulous, amazing construction mixed in with things that have been there and survived since the time when the French were ruling in that country. It's a place of people. Of course, every country is a place of people, but here in particular, these are wonderful folks and their scooters. People ride these little scooters, about 150 cc's is as big as you'll find on the streets, no big bikes at all. They're all small scooters. And did I mention traffic to you? This is just a real typical street scene. You'll find this all the time, and older folks riding their scooters and younger folks riding their scooters, and then there's street congestion as the other kinds of vehicles try to mix in with all the scooters. This is the family car. They're allowed to carry up to two children, four people maximum, and they'll do that every chance that they get. Vietnam is a fascinating place because there are about 110 million people who live in Vietnam. And that the land size is about the size of the state of New Mexico. Can you imagine putting 110 million people in the state of New Mexico? The jackrabbits wouldn't even have room to grow down there. And so you ask then, well, where are our churches? Land is incredibly expensive. This is reclaimed land that because of the dikes and the levees that hold the rivers back, this land has been made usable. And even though it is squatters' land, and even though the government can take it back at any time, if you were wanting to build something on this particular piece of property that I photographed, you'd still have to pay $250,000 to buy it. It's an incredibly expensive place. And so we have house churches there. The pastor, he lives on the first floor of his own private residence, and that's where he and his family will live. Then on the second floor, they will have a sanctuary, a small room that will handle maybe 40 people at the most, because that's all the space they have. And then typically up on the third floor, they will have classrooms and places where they will do various kinds of other ministries, tutoring after school, helping people to learn how to do some of the basics of life. And so it's a whole different thing. And by the way, it's all underground. It is not published. It is not known. It's not advertised. And yet they are doing ministry in their neighborhoods. One of the things that is quite phenomenal about Vietnam is the fact that every block has what's known as a block watcher. They are paid by the government, the Communist Party, to watch the block, and they are to keep track of all of the comings and goings on their block. That means that kids can't go from one house to the next house for a sleepover without being registered. They keep that close track on it. If a visitor is to come and stay in your home for a few days or a period of time, you have to fill out extensive paperwork, and it has to be turned in so that the government will know where you are and be able to keep track. When you go there as a tourist, as you arrive at the hotel, you have to turn in your passport, and they in turn take photocopies of it and take it down to the government so that they keep track of where everybody is living. And then in the midst of all of that intense scrutiny, it's amazing that ministry continues to take place. But they're handing out rice to help in times of famine and difficulty. They do other kinds of compassionate ministry work. They also tutor the children and help them with their schoolwork. We have a couple of places over there that take in university students and give them housing so that they'd be able to live in a safe place while they're getting their studies. And it's such a significant thing that the block watcher has become aware, in all of the places where we have churches, and we have 16 in Vietnam, in all of those places, the block watcher is so aware of the contribution that the church makes to the community that they ignore the spiritual activities, because they know that it would be a tremendous loss to their neighborhood if the church had to go away. And I think to myself of our churches here in the United States, and I ask the question, and exactly who would notice if we closed the doors on some of our churches? Their example to me is very humbling and is very significant. The contrast, we were also in Cambodia recently. There's all kinds of rice fields, and I love their pickup trucks. You see that on the right? And that's how they move stuff around, a lot of stuff. Up there on the back of that trailer being pulled by the tractor is a combine. They're small little rigs that are easy to transport around from one field to the next. Virtually all the rice is harvested green. They don't allow it to dry like we do here in the United States. They harvest it green, and then they spread it out along the roadsides in order for it to dry, and then put it into these 100-pound sacks to haul them off to the grain elevators, although it's just a big warehouse, they don't use elevators. And that's how they provide rice for their meals. In Cambodia, we learned that a meal without rice is merely a snack. They eat rice for breakfast. They eat rice for lunch. They eat rice for dinner. They eat rice for the mid-morning snack and the afternoon snack. They eat rice just before they go to bed at night. They eat rice all the time. It's the one thing that they have access to help fill their bellies when they are in such impoverished situations that they aren't really getting good and balanced nutrition. Whoops. Going to go back. And that's the church kitchen. I think it's almost as good as what you've got back here, wouldn't you, ladies? Sitting on the ground, stirring up a pot of whatever, and then washing the dishes. That on the right is the dishwashing crew. They have to keep their food covered because everything is open to the air, and the flies are abundant because of these open kitchens. So it keeps most of the flies away when they put something on the table. Lots of old vehicles. I wondered if this might have been a Russian-made vehicle. I don't recognize it from anywhere, but there's all kinds of variety of vehicles that are still available over there. Most people still travel by scooter, not nearly as congested as Vietnam is, and they buy their gas for their motorbike by the liter. They big bottles of petrol along the side of the road, and that's where you go to the gas station. And even the monks enjoy a ride. You find that over in Cambodia, it is still predominantly a Buddhist country. There is a very, very small enclave of Muslims, and then the church, the Protestant Evangelical Church is growing, and God is doing some amazing things over there. But these monks, they'll go up and down the streets every morning, and they'll stand in front of your house, they'll stand in front of your business, and they'll stand there and chant until you come out and give them some sort of an offering that you put in their bowl, and then they will pray a prayer blessing over you. And if you want to stay in good graces with the monks, then you have to be sure to contribute on a regular basis. There's also the famous Angkor Wat. It's beyond imagination until you get there. Built in the 12th century, it was initially built as a Buddhist place. Then the Muslims came in and took over for 100 years or so. Then the Buddhists took over again. But in the Cambodian War that started in 1974, the whole country was focused on the war. And as a result, this magnificent structure was completely covered over with vines and trees that grow very rapidly in that tropical environment. So that it was only about 10 years ago that some archaeologists were wandering around and exploring out in the jungles and discovered here's this phenomenal, magnificent structure that shows amazing architecture, amazing engineering, all built by hand, and they have uncovered it, and it has become one of the most popular tourist attractions in all of Southeast Asia. I was privileged to be in the Northwest Extension Center of CNBC's Southeast Asia Nazarene Bible College. It's very poor. It's very primitive. Again, the pastor lives in the church building, and I had the opportunity when I was living in Mississippi at the time. They grow a lot of rice in that particular area. Had a rice farmer in the church, and he gave me some bags of his rice to take over and give to some of the pastors over there. And as a gift from the Americans, and I had them cook up some of it. This was one who was grateful for it, and then here's another one. He was a converted monk who's preaching the good news, and I had them cook the rice up to see what this American rice was like, and they said it was okay. Communion elements. You use what you've got. Some sort of a strawberry cola and some little cookies. I'll always remember this man and his incredible smile. And I think about this guy, and I complained sometimes that my shoes weren't the best until I met this man who had no foot. It was blown off in that horrible war that still impacts their country to this day. We bought postcards on the street from a man who had no hands because they were blown off in the war, trying to support himself. There's other kinds of, but there are still landmines present over there. You don't just go for a walk out in the countryside. Pastor John, I'm thinking that uh, You wouldn't get off the road and just go wandering like you did going over the Mackenzie Pass, because you just never know when you're going to find another evidence of the war. I was there on another trip in November this last year, we had the privilege of taking several Vietnam veterans over to be a part of an opportunity for them to bring some closure to their war experiences. And it was a very, very humbling thing to experience. This is where the war was fought. We took them out to the places where they had been stationed while they were there. This happens to be Fire Base Stinson. And at one time, that whole hill was completely bare of any brush or anything, and that's where the helicopters would land, and the troops would be sent out from there to their various assignments in the war. One of the guys that we took with us, Private First Class Danny West, he was over there for 19 months. He earned a Purple Heart, and he earned the Bronze Star with the Oak Leaf Cluster for valor. I grew up hating the war. I grew up at the end of the war, my draft number was 361. I never got close to being drafted. But I had no appreciation for the men and women who had gone to Vietnam and had sacrificed so heavily in a war that we just have to admit was a mess all the way through. War is always bad, but that one was particularly difficult. And I was very humbled by the privilege of being with Danny and these other guys. And I'm just wondering this morning, or this afternoon rather, if there are any of you who served in Vietnam, would you stand for us, please? We thank you for your service. And any others that have served in the military, I honor you and I respect you. And I appreciate what you have done for our country. It was Jesus who said, "You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. And then the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. This is my command. Love each other." With that verse in mind, those verses in mind, I want to talk to you about how we are doing our best to bear fruit for the kingdom. This was graduation last November. We took the veterans over, and at the same time, we got to celebrate a graduation. We awarded one Bachelor of Theology, 8 Diploma of Ministry, and 8 Certificate of Lay Ministry. These are people who sacrifice heavily to be able to go to school and are even under the threat of arrest and beatings and other things because of their faith. And yet they press on to be able to attend the school. And in case you're wondering, the really handsome guy just to the left of the podium in the white dress, that's me. Up in Cambodia, I had the privilege of being a part of the ceremonies in which we awarded district licenses to all these pastors. In Cambodia, we have over 120 men and women who are studying for the ministry. And they are preparing to go back to their villages, go back to their places where they live amongst their own people, and there they are going to serve the Lord. It's quite amazing. It's all bivocational. They all have to farm. They all have to do the best they can to survive. And when they go away to go to class, they have to bring somebody in, a friend or a neighbor, who will protect their farmland for them, because if they don't while they're gone at class, guess what will happen? Somebody else will come in and take it away from them. It's an amazing thing, and yet here's just a sampling of some of the people who are preparing to serve God and to bear fruit, the kind of fruit that will last. Our newest leaders in Southeast Asia are Joe and Amy Hall. They have a daughter named Ella, a son named Sam. Wonderful, wonderful people. They're from Oklahoma. He left a very successful Christian counseling practice in order to respond to God's call to the ministry. And he and his wife and their family arrived there in July, just about now, a year ago. I want you to notice the blonde-haired girl that is encircled with red. That's Amy. She came to Montreal in 1996. That was when I was there serving as the district superintendent of the Canada-Quebec district. She was part of a program called Youth in Mission, where we send out Nazarene young people, Nazarene college students, to many places across the world and engage them in ministry. It was while she was in Montreal, that God confirmed on her heart that he had called her to serve in missions, foreign missions. And it was a very significant experience in her life. Well, guess what? When I got over to Vietnam, I had this beautiful blonde young woman come up to me, threw her arms around me. She said, "Oh, Carlton, I was called when I was serving with you in Montreal. And now she and her family are serving in Vietnam." What an amazing pattern as God has led for her to be there. And why is she there? It's so that a little girl like this will have some hope. So that people over there will hear the good news. And brothers and sisters, the reality is that she is there because of churches just like Westside Church of the Nazarene. You see, I've checked your record, and I've noticed that you're faithful in giving to the World Evangelism Fund. In fact, you have paid your assignment, your allocation, you've paid it in full year after year after year. Did you know that your funds, your money, sent off to Kansas City, and you think, well, we'll never see that again? Yeah, I get it. But those funds help to finance Youth in Mission. Those funds help to finance the operation in Montreal where Amy heard God's call to ministry. And your funds, along with Nazarenes around the world, it's your funds that are making a difference and allowing somebody like Amy and her husband, Joe, and their two children to live and serve in Vietnam. And so I'm just one of many that have benefited by your generosity. And I want you to know that God didn't call us, as Pastor said, to just look at the Klamath Basin and say, well, there it is. But rather, God has called us to bear fruit that will last. And when we are engaged in that kind of ministry, we can ask anything and it will be done for us. And it is as we respond to his command to love each other that he will be able to bless our lives. So one more time, thank you. Thank you for giving. And thank you for supporting missions, not only here in this state, but around the world through the World Evangelism Fund. Pastor?